Welcome to Houndsy, the Steel Army Podcast. I'm Dan Yost, and we're going to talk about a Hounds season opener, some big dollar plans, pie in the sky plans, maybe real plans, who knows, we'll talk about it. We got details on the Open Cup, we got a game to preview, a game to review, and I got two cool kids to do it with me. First off, my man Vesty, Kyle, what's good?
Hello. Doing pretty good. Enjoying this wonderful weather we've had the last couple of days.
Right.
Shame it didn't go into the weekend.
Correct. We had snow on. Was that Sunday we had snow? Saturday we had snow? And then it was 70 degrees 2 days later?
Mm-hmm.
Crazy.
Yeah, last weekend was miserable, so I'm sure the team was pretty happy that they were in the desert. Although it sounded like it was pretty cold down there, too.
Yeah, not Vesty. You were here. Bob Lilly had on his very nice jacket, it looked like.
Bougie.
So Yost.
Yo.
You know what today is?
I'm assuming you're going to say it's Pi Day.
Heck yeah. I'm still in the since I missed the last show, I'm still in the hot take mood. So what's a hot take about our preferred pies? And maybe we need to introduce our third host before we get into it.
We already heard that Ariana's, you could hear her familiar dulcet tones already coming through. So I'll save asking her how she's doing, but she can answer the question anyways. So are we talking dessert pies, pizza pies?
I mean, being America, when I say pie, it's dessert pie, probably. We're not getting like meat pies or ham pies like in England.
Okay.
And pizza. That's pizza's not in the spirit of the question.
I don't know. That's where all the sales seem to be coming from the pizza manufacturers today.
Trying to encroach on the wrong territory.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, of the more traditional pies, it's always gonna be an apple. Pumpkin with a close second. The Eaton Park, like Oreo pie, Oreo cream pie. That's always fantastic. And then when I'm feeling kind of fancy, lemon meringue. Were any of those answers acceptable to you?
We're gonna start calling you Dan All American Yost. So I was gonna actually, you took mine right out at the end there. I was gonna go with lemon meringue is probably my top. I always go for a good lemon meringue.
It's a hell of a delicacy.
Yeah, I guess I'm bougie.
Lauer, how about you?
I think, well, mine is seasonal. I like apple pies in the summer when they're, you know, can be nice and warm and then with a dollop of ice cream. And then in like the fall, it's pumpkin. I'm a big pumpkin fan. But different than that, and any time really, I like pecan pies. I think they're like very underrated. But yeah. Those are probably my top three. But there's a place by my house that does a caramel walnut apple pie with like local apples. And it is probably the best thing I've ever tasted. It's like just got a crunch of the nuts in there and then the warm caramel on top and then inside with apples. Oh, I swear by it every time.
Go on.
I was gonna say, you know, actually, I think my top pie that I forget about because it's a one day, once a year pie. Speaking of underappreciated, is a good Kentucky Derby pie.
What
Derby pie?
Go on.
So, fun fact about me is I was. Born in Louisville, my parents lived down there for a while, and so they celebrate the Derby every year. So Kentucky Derby pie is It's kind of like a pecan pie, so it's got walnuts, chocolate, pecans, like a bourbon baked into it, and then it's covered with a crust, kind of more like an apple pie than like other pecan pies, which I think usually just the nuts are open. But yeah, it's made for the Kentucky Derby. It's like a once a year thing. My mom always makes a couple. Delicious. Love it.
I've never heard of this, and I'm slowly interested.
Yeah, I don't think it gets much play outside of people who pay attention to the Kentucky Derby.
Yeah, apparently. Or at least, you know, in the narrow sample size of the people I know. This is the first I've heard of such a thing. Are there any popular pies that you just, either of you two just absolutely want to curb stomp? Just hot take, this popular pie is a terrible pie.
Key lime.
Ooh. You know what
I'll like, go, yeah. I love lemon meringue. I love anything lemon flavored. Anything, period. My dad works at a bakery and they make lemon cookies and they're lemon with like white chocolate on top. Those have always, since I was very little, those have always been my favorite cookies by far. So anything lemon flavored, lemon bars, lemon meringue pie. But you switch it over to lime, anything lime flavored, wrong. That is a crime against humanity and should never be anyone's favorite pie. Period. Full stop.
I'm not going to disagree with you on that. for much of the same reasons.
I'm going to say cherry pie is awful. Ugh. I'm just not really big on cherries, and that's a lot of cherries.
I could take it or leave it. Yeah. I'm a big cherry person, but you're right that the cherry pie can sometimes be just too much cherry flavor.
I feel like anything but apple, like blueberry, or sorry, blackberry pies, those tend to be, just a little too much, like, of the sweet, like the sugar from the fruit itself. Like, apple, while it is, they can be sweet. I feel like apple pies aren't, like, overwhelmingly sweet. But then, like, you get a blackberry pie, and I feel like that's just too sweet. You're like over the top there, and I can't get behind that. So I feel like it's the same way for me for cherry. It's just, well, I just also don't like cherry flavored anything, so.
That's fair. I should ask the question. Hey Ariana, how you doing?
Good. Good. Yeah, we finished painting the TIFO today for the home opener. Be there, be square, see it yourself. So I'm excited.
Nice. Now, this is not the first Zoom call you're doing today, is it?
It is not. I was lucky enough to be interviewed this earlier today about the stadium expansion for KDK. That was pretty cool.
How did that go? Like, rate your own performance.
It was, so the Zoom itself was like 10 minutes. Super quick, super easy. He asked me 4 questions and only used about, I don't know, 30 seconds of my discussion. I talked a lot about who we are, the fact that like our growth has been, which he didn't, he only highlighted the part where I talked about the team's growth has been great. But I did talk about how, you know, we have the most members this year. I think we've peaked that like this year, or we're close to it. We have the most members this year than we've ever had before, or it's close. But definitely at this point in any other previous year, we've had like this is the most before we even get to the home opener. And so I'm like, that expansion is like with the people. And then, you know, the team is really great. And I talked about playoff runs and the Shield we won last year. And he did ask me, he's like, you know, what do you think is the catalyst of the growth in the last 10 years? And I was like, well, the first is us coming to Highmark. Now we're in the middle of the city. We're in the city, you know, you drive on 376 and you see us, you drive on Fort Pitt Bridge and you see the stadium. So maybe that gets people to like Google who the hounds are. I mean, it's written across the seats. And then, you know, it was it 7 years ago, Bob came in. So, you know, Bob then started building, you know, a winning team. And so now we have like sturdy, you know, players, Canardo Forbes, we have Danny Griffin, we have Robbie Mertz, like we have a sturdy like stock of midfielders. I mean, they're all midfielders, which is fantastic.
We're definitely referring to them as a sturdy stock of midfielders from going from now on.
Sturdy stock of midfielders. Sturdy stock of midfielders. And then I was like, then the front office is doing, you know, their work. They're doing a lot of marketing. They're getting the name out there.
Oh, you said
ticket deals. Well, I said it. It was recorded, but it was not played on TV. So I didn't actually say it. So I was like, it's all three of us working together and just kind of building in different aspects. You know, we're building Bob's building a winning team, and the front office is building, you know, a promotional schedule that people talk about for a long time. And then we're building, you know, a true diehard fan base that will be there every game. And I brought up the Hartford game from last year where it was like it was delayed by 3 hours in the rain, and there was still a contingent of diehards that was there. So it was fun to talk about. He was like, he didn't really want to focus on the expansion as much,
which is crazy because that's what the whole thing was about.
Yeah, but it was more just like what the expansion, like why now basically, and then what the expansion means for us for the future, like, you know. So I was like,
you could have been very brutally honest and like, well, there's a potential for $10 million.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, but I didn't get, like, I had all my talking points, I didn't get many of them out. So
we did, we wrote talking points and everything, damn it.
Yeah, I had them all written down on post-it notes across my desk. I was so prepared. I even had like quotes I wanted to say. He didn't bring up the MLS, so that threw out that, you know, question entirely. And I didn't even get to use the fancy one that Jake came up with. Pittsburgh has 4 sports teams, and the Hounds are a big part of that. I could have. That would have been a great quote.
Just shoehorn that in there somewhere.
Yeah. Yeah, so. But yeah, it was a good discussion. And ultimately, I mean, I think that we should talk about it.
How'd you think you did?
I think I did all right.
All right.
I think I did all right with, 15 minutes of planning? Half an hour, maybe, of planning? You know, I work from home, so it's not, I don't necessarily, like, I wear a sweatshirt or a t-shirt, you know, to work. I don't do my makeup. So I was like, I did my hair and my makeup, and then I threw a Steel Army shirt on, which you couldn't really see by the angle, you know, of where the Zoom was. But I think I did all right. It's a good first one. I guess it's not the first one. I did the USL one last year, but yeah. But it was fun to be able to talk about that. The amount of people who have texted me or DM'd me or Googled me, it's very strange. A couple of people have searched my Facebook.
Uh-oh.
I have like hits on if you hit my Facebook or like my LinkedIn, which is the thing. If you Google my name, the only thing that comes up for me is my LinkedIn on purpose. But yeah, I thought it was interesting. It was fun.
Fair enough.
Just, I find it interesting that he reached out to us at all and wanted a word from
it's
us.
That solid, messaged you. Yeah, he DM'd or he messaged the Twitter account, and we went from there. It's that strong KDK Hounds partnership, right?
Yeah. I was surprised. So.
All right, I guess we should actually talk about things they're on the list now that we're 15 minutes into this whole thing. On the road for the season opener, Hounds 0, New Mexico United 1. Vesti, you haven't had the chance to speak for a while. What were your takeaways from the match? And I'm assuming you were watching at home?
Yes, I was.
ESPN Plus or KDK Plus?
ESPN Plus. I thought KDK Plus came over the antenna. CW or whatever it used to be definitely did, but I couldn't find it. So I was watching ESPN Plus. For those watching ESPN Plus, you know, you may have heard on Twitter, we got the Memphis Vegas audio for like the first 10 minutes for some reason. It was really, really weird. So I spent the first 10 minutes seeing if I could figure out how to watch it another way, because I heard the KDKA stream was fine. But eventually that all got sorted out. But anywho, yeah, so I kind of just have a big shoulders shrug for this game. I feel like we don't tend to come out very hot to start of the season. You know, we have all these new guys. They're learning Bob's system. They're not used to each other, so the positions aren't as strong as they get towards the end of the season. Plus the fact that we're going on the road to West Coast-ish, which we never do particularly great either. So I don't want to say I was expecting a loss, but I wasn't necessarily expecting a win. I would have said a draw. And I mean, to be honest, it came pretty close. That their one goal, they were trying that pass through a few times before they finally got it, and the guy still almost fucked it up. Like he the ball got stuck in his feet for a second, and he could have missed. And it was, you know, one little tap really away from this being 0-0 versus 1-0. But I thought they looked fine. I thought the defense and midfield looked pretty good. I think that goal is probably a result of just the back line not being used to each other much at this point, or at least in the positions they're playing for. You know, there were some returners in the back line. I would expect that, you know, to get tightened up as the season goes on. I'd say the biggest takeaway is I thought the attack was a little dull. Like, they didn't quite have anything creative to do, and it concerns me a bit that we might get a season of that. But I don't want to put too much stock in this. This is the first game, so I'm gonna hope for a better look this weekend.
I mean, on the attack, and there's a handful of games every year where this happens, and I'm pretty sure I bitch about it every time it happens. This was another one of those work it down the wings and then hurriedly cross it to no one who's in the box, mm-hmm. or overhit the entire box and just it squirts off to the other side and hopefully someone can recycle it back in. But it was just ineffective cross after ineffective cross. There was no real working of the ball through the middle of the field to kind of enter the 16 from the top of the box. It seemed very uncreative offensively, which is kind of what you were saying. Yeah, but again, to the newness of this lineup, you will just want to guess how of the people who started this past Saturday, how many of them started against Tampa for the shield raising match last year?
It's gotta be four.
Four is correct. Three. Four and a half, four is correct.
Our midfield.
Kizza, Forbes, Griffin, and Junior, I believe, was the fourth.
Jet.
We'll get there. Yeah, it's so a lot of new pieces. That back line of it was Eto, DeShields, Griffin, which that's a thing. Asamano and Rovi on the right side. It looked like the Shields kind of turned off just for a second that led to the goal. Maybe that was an injury that happened because he came up a little lame and then was subbed off at halftime. And now it sounds like he's going to be out a couple weeks. Which kind of takes me to the... I feel like this league has to get past this really shitty baseball field setup.
Yes.
You had a lot of people in Pittsburgh, new fans, jumping on the bandwagon, and their first look of the Hounds in 2024 is a frankly embarrassing set up in New Mexico. It's got to be better than that. There's just no way around it.
You couldn't even see the lines to follow.
No.
The game.
And the camera operator was equally horrific.
There's a point that I'm fully convinced that, you know, we had a good scoring chance. We'll never see it because the camera operator was not directed at the goal. It feels very much Miracle on the Mon. You know, we'll never get to see. I rewatched the game to try to see if I could see, you know, it looked like there was a good attempt, but nope. Can't see it because poor camera operator.
I wonder if it was a robo camera, because I felt like it was always slightly delayed in tracking the action. Like it was, you know, processing an input from a joystick somewhere.
Oh. I hadn't considered that. And that's really bad if it is. But I don't remember watching other games from New Mexico and ever seeing it be that bad. Maybe something to keep track of this year. Maybe they've changed up the setup and it's just going to be shit going forward.
At the lab.
First game for the players, first game for the interns.
Mm-hmm. Ariana, any of your takeaways from this match?
A lot of things that were already mentioned, but it's hard to play on such a crappy field. Like, you know, you could even tell, and I think, you know, when we play, do we play Tulsa in Tulsa this year? I think so, because they've switched division, so I think it's every other year. Anyway, last year when we played at Tulsa, that's when Junior got hurt. He broke his collarbone. And I think it's just those fields are so rough on players. There's no give to the grass because it's baseball. You don't necessarily want to have a cushy baseball field in the outfield. So it's just, it's so brutal on the players' bodies. And to start the game on the West Coast in a shitty field with a hard, you know, it's just, I knew it was going to be one of those, like, I was hoping for a draw, but if it wasn't a draw, it was going to be a 1-0 loss. I just don't think, we never play well on the road, and on those fields, they're just atrocious. They got lucky on the goal, so I'll give them that, but
yes, the field was terrible, but I don't want to, it shouldn't overshadow the fact that the Hounds were second best in that game.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there was definitely a lot of poor communication. It's something that we've seen and that I've commented on even in preseason. We're just not clicking yet. Whether that is because, you know, we don't have presumably our, you know, starting forward, our new starting forward in Keziah Sterling. He was not there. Pierre Caillé, who I thought was pretty much a shoo-in for a starter defensive position, was subbed in. And he hasn't even been here. I don't think he played in any preseason game. If anyone, it would have been the very last one. So I don't think he's really meshing well, and maybe that's why he didn't start. The lineup surprised me in just who was picked, especially with like the senior, you know, the veteran players that we picked up in the off season. I was kind of surprised that there were some names that were, I mean, Langston didn't start. I thought he would be a shoo-in to start. They had Danny Griffin at center back, which please don't ever do that again.
Yeah. Somebody want to explain that to me.
I like him as a player, but not in that position. Literally any other position. I just don't think he's... I don't like that. I don't. Sorry. It's the first Bob decision in a while that I've outright
I have a theory on it. I don't know if it's not a huge theory, but Griffin was playing the role of Pierre Caillet because Pierre Caillet got the town late and is not match fit yet. And the next... You had Biasi, or you had Hogan, who was... Apparently, I had a knock. Was that Was that why he didn't start? Is that the going rumor?
I don't know. I don't think he was injured.
But anyways, and this takes me to a point I was going to make. With Kayette coming in late, Sterling coming in late, the Hounds as an organization do a poor job of getting some of their international guys get their paperwork cleared in time. And it seems like every year there's a guy or two that we're waiting for to get the work visa thing settled. And I think a part of that might have contributed to, one, a guy we all assume will be a starting forward, why he was not available, and then a guy that I pretty confidently will be a starting center back, why he came off the bench. And that just, to me, it feels like an organizational issue that they need to get on this a little earlier. I don't know, is that a fair reading, or do you think it's something else?
I think that there's definitely visa things that need to be worked out, but I was watching the Rhode Island Instagram, and I was watching their pictures and their videos, and there was one person that we all know very well that was missing until this past week. So with that being said, I think if Rhode Island had played on Saturday, they would not have had Dequa, because I think he was probably under the same situation where he was also having visa issues. And I don't know if it's just they can't start early enough to get the visas. I mean, we can't be the only team, and I don't necessarily pay attention to, you know, international players on other teams to watch to see if they play, or, you know, it's one thing, I think, when you have the same sponsor for the visa. So any of our other players, Junior, he has had now the same sponsor for a couple of years. So now it's a little bit easier to just roll over the, you know, visa. He probably doesn't have to jump through as many hoops because the sponsor is not changing. With newer players, you know, you have to start the process from scratch. And even the keeper, the new keeper, Gabriel Parada, he was here very early. He was here well before preseason even started. So that made me think they had started his super early. And he was even one of the last signings. He didn't play, so we don't even know. They could still be working out visa stuff with him.
He might have been unavailable for the same reason.
Yeah. So I don't know. You know, I don't know if it's just the week is too, you know, the first, you know, week of the season is too early, or, you know, 1 week too early, or, you know, it doesn't seem like, I didn't really notice it until I was watching Rhode Island for Dequa. But I think it might not be just us.
But it feels, and I can be totally wrong, because I'm saying this with absolutely no research, so this could be a bit reckless, but this feels like an issue that Louisville doesn't deal with. Like, they get those I's dotted in time.
Well, you know, they sign their players early. This is kind of the risk you get for someone like Bob, who likes to wait towards, you know, closer to the season to see if he can get a good deal with guys who haven't made teams yet.
But we signed Kayette fairly early in the process. Like, Sterling, I know, came around late, but...
But we signed him on January 19th. So, I don't know how long the visa process takes, but that only gives you...
2 months? 2 months?
No, game March 9th, so it's 5 weeks. 6 weeks.
Six, okay. Still.
It's a shortened time frame, especially if... I don't think the season started earlier this year. It feels like it has, but I don't know. I feel like it's kind of the risk you take when you wait as long as we tend to get players, whereas Louisville, they signed everybody in freaking December for next year, pretty much.
Mm-hmm. It could have also been just, you know, where Pierre was coming from. Like, I don't know the full process of, you know, visa. We probably could have asked our resident Steel Army visa expert, you know, some of these questions. But I know that Pierre was held up. Like, Pierre's could be different because he's French. Different than, like, Kazaya's English. You know, there could also be a difference there between the two. I mean, I feel like the United States has a good friendship with both, but I don't know if that makes a difference either. And last year, it was Ilal Osuvanu that we were struggling with visa stuff, and he's from Ghana, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it might just be... Yeah, all three of those are taking a long time, but I don't. And there's a lot of hoops to jump through. They have to be here on like a visitor visa, and then they have to go back home or go out of the country to switch from a visitor visa to a, or rather, a tourist visa back to a work visa. So it's very strange hoops that they have to jump through, and I don't know. It's just strange. I know that Pierre was not here, like, because I was here, but his visitor, like, his tourist visa was taking a long time. That's why he wasn't here until the very end of preseason. And then he had to leave and now has just cleared his work visa, so now he's coming back for that. I don't necessarily know when Pierre would have come originally, but they have to do all that, like, physical and all that extra work before a lot of it can be, I mean, before even like the contract can be signed. So you have to think, like, Pierre signed his contract early, so maybe his visitor visa was early enough. And then he went home, and then there was issues with his permanent visa. So permanent, semi-permanent, whatever it is.
It'd be interesting to track the timelines on these things to see,
mm-hmm.
you know, what ideally, if you really want this guy for game one, how far out do you need to really get this ball rolling? And, you know, is there more efficient processes out there? But I don't know, maybe that'll be an off-season interview. Try to find someone who does player visas and ask the hard-hitting questions. Vesti, my lazy analysis of Eric Dick would be good shot stopper, mobile for a big guy. His distribution is questionable and not sure how he wants to play with the ball at his feet. Agree?
Yeah, I think I'd agree with that. I thought he looked pretty good first game. You know, he had to do a bit of work since they were getting behind our line pretty consistently. But, you know, he... with his experience, as you would expect, I guess that he was pretty aggressive and he had good positioning, you know, shut down the guys breaking through. And there was that one where the ball kind of bounced out to the guy at the top of the 18. And, you know, if he knew to kind of slide over and position himself where the guy was probably going to shoot it and end up going right to him. So, yeah, he looked good. You know, I liked what I see. Or like I saw, I'm happy to hear he was not on the injury report this week, because towards the end of the game, it looked like he may have pulled something and he looked a little...
Came up a little lame. Little,
yeah, but I guess it wasn't anything, so... So yeah, liked what I saw. I'm going to continue to assume he's our number one, but I would not be surprised if we saw some back and forth like we have in seasons past to see if any other guys can take that from him.
Fair. Ariana, any final thoughts?
Oh, sorry. Real quick, back to the visa thing. Louisville also didn't play last weekend. So they also had an extra week to clear visas. And just briefly scrolling through pictures that they posted in the preseason, Arturo is not in a lot of them. He's in... the kits pictures, but those could have been taken months ago. but he's not in any of the preseason game pictures.
We don't have the lineups from when they played 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, in their last preseason game. But I just don't that's another thing that I talked about in, you know, the chat, is I think that it's unfair that not everyone played the first week. And I think it's more so not fair now that, you know, we've dealt with visa issues that maybe just needed one more week. And some of the teams that may have also been dealing with this visa issues got another week. But
throw it in the suggestion box at the USL office.
I liked, but to the game, I liked, you asked about Dick earlier. He, I liked his presence in the net. He had a great save. It seems like he's very clearly comfortable there, and he's a tall dude, and really has that commanding presence in the net. So, very quick to get the ball, you know, out of his hands and down the field. Wasn't really, even when it was tied, wasn't really necessarily there to dilly dally. He was there to play the game. So. I'm excited to see. I don't necessarily blame him for the goal that went in. So I have a feeling as well that he's the starting keeper, but we have two other great, seemingly, you know, great keepers. We've seen them play in preseason. So
I mean, he's a starter.
I'd be fine with like a mix. You know, at the end of the season, we're looking at all of the, you know, the breakdown of all the players and you know, how many games they've played. And it, I wouldn't be mad if we saw an even, you know, pretty even split among the three of them.
Oh.
Until I'm proven wrong. But
so we'll throw out that right question. Now. We'll take that question now as our last part of this.
Hold it.
What week do we see someone else in net? When does Bob make his first change? Vesti?
Who was the...
Hold on, I'm trying to look at the schedule real quick.
Okay. I'll go. It's gonna be 4 or 5, and I want to say 5 because it's gonna be on the road, and he'll keep Dick in for the second home game. But Bob may also not give a shit about that.
Yeah, I'm gonna say with 5 as well at Rhode Island, because I'd say first home game you keep your main guy in, and then we have Louisville and Tampa, which I think you also want your strongest hand. And I know Rhode Island got the preseason chatter about being a strong team, but I think that's a game you can roll a dice on to see what the other guys can do.
Yeah, I can get behind that.
Week 5.
Yeah.
Rolling out someone else on week 5. Called it here first.
Don't have like the Open Cup to see the third keeper, the second keeper, you know?
Because we don't have a second round game.
Yeah. Perfect segue.
What a perfect segue. How'd you know? We got details on the 2024 Open Cup. Luckily, it comes a week before the damn thing starts. You guys want to hear some details?
So we'll not pay attention to anything. Please tell me.
Yes. No one cares about the Open Cup, didn't you tell?
Not in this podcast.
Yeah.
All about Leagues Cup, baby.
we're a Leagues Cup podcast. Yo. So the boring stuff that most of you probably don't care about, but we're going to throw it out there anyways. Because the money matters, damn it. how the tournament is making the money, how the tournament gets the money that then pays out, is mostly through hosting fees and U.S. Soccer taking a cut of the gate. For example, last year when we hosted, the Hounds hosted Columbus in the round of 32, I'm sorry, the round of 16, it cost the Hounds $25,000 plus 15% of the net revenue above $100,000 of the gate, basically. This year, for that same game, it's going to be a flat 40% of all revenue, not $25,000 plus 15%. So they are going to a straight cut off the top in the later rounds once MLS gets involved. The travel reimbursement, which was another sticking point for a lot of people, last year was, up until the finals, it was $15,000 for the away team as a reimbursement on travel. That is getting bumped in the later rounds to $45,000, then $60,000 and $90,000 for the final. So that's a double to a tripling, basically, of the travel budget, which is a huge expense going in there. There's stuff about roster rules. I guess for the purposes of what we like to talk about, everyone's concerned about the next pro teams coming in. Are they basically, is it an opportunity for MLS teams to put their first team basically to play as the next pro team? But there was a lot of stipulations in place about minutes that those guys have played. Are they loans? Things like that. It's going to make it hard for MLS teams to put those first team guys on the next pro squad. So that somewhat of a concern is alleviated. Now for the part that people are going to care about more, the actual draw. Getting to the round where the Hounds come in, which is the round of 32. What they're doing this year is they're calling it a bunch of four-team mini brackets. So 8 times 4, 8 brackets of 4. Each of these brackets will have one MLS team, which enters in this round, one USL championship team that is a seeded team, which the Hounds are one of those teams based on their finish last year, and then their two spots come from winners from the previous round. So it's one MLS team, one seeded championship team, and then two other teams coming down. So in the Hounds group, it will be themselves, MLS, and two previous round winners. It's going to be done more or less geographic as best they can. And then it's, at that point, open draw in terms of who hosts and who plays whom. So there's no restriction on who the Hounds can or can't face out of that group, and no restrictions on who can or cannot host as long as they're willing to host. Vesti, did that make sense?
I believe it did.
Okay, we'll go with that. Ariana, I believe you tried to do a little geographic homework to figure out who the Hounds could have in their mini bracket in terms of an MLS team. And what do you suspect?
I did.
Let's show your work.
I did. I did a ton of, like, breakdown, and I was doing the math on, like, where they were all located. So, and then I misread the list of teams and accidentally read something. But so my thought is based solely on, like, you know, location. So geographically, Pittsburgh and Kansas City are together in a group. And then either Charleston and Houston or Charleston and Atlanta in a group. And then on the other side of that, either Tampa and Houston or Tampa and Atlanta in a group. San Antonio and Dallas, RSL and Colorado, LA and Phoenix, San Jose and Orange County, and then Seattle and Sacramento. That's my thought. Any of those California teams could also be, they're so close to each other that they could also be tossed around. But geographically, I was like, what is the highest city in LA, in California, to be paired with, you know, Seattle, because they're the highest city in MLS. So it's just doing a lot of map work, looking at, you know, where Texas teams were and where the California teams were. But that is my prediction. I wouldn't mind, like, Charleston and Houston, like, because of Charleston and Tampa being, you know, right on the edge, you know, Tampa and Atlanta are super close, but Charleston, you know, being thrown in there might switch it off. So I'm that's my prediction for if they go solely, this is solely based on the USL and the MLS teams. Now you throw in the other two teams that might, may or may not make it. You're on your own.
Yeah. That's the reason. Figure that out.
Yo, correct me if I'm wrong. And maybe this only applies to MLS teams, because of course it would. They want to try to make it so teams entering in the same round do not play each other.
That is getting, that's thrown out this year.
Okay.
Because that was our original thought, was the seeded USL teams would not be able to face the MLS teams because they're all entering in the same round. But that is
right
by the wayside, at least this year.
What
is it?
So I guess.
Go ahead.
Sorry, I guess the reason why I bring it up then is that if it's one MLS team, one seeded team, and then two others, then we can eliminate Charleston and Tampa from our group because they're seeded with us.
Correct.
Okay. And maybe that was in the big list that Ariana was talking about. I maybe misheard. So it really limits if geographically. Who the heck we can play?
Yeah, because the issue is there of the seeded USL teams, a lot of them are Eastern based, and then of the MLS teams outside of Atlanta, they're all Central and West. So there's not any truly natural geographic selections here. And now maybe, because US Soccer says if there's no. The obvious geographical selection, it's them by random. So I mean, if they choose geographic to mean just not the closest seeded team and closest MLS team, and they go, well, they're not close enough, so we're just going to make it random. I mean, maybe there is a chance that it's the Hounds in Seattle.
Yeah, I mean, you start to throw in as well the other two teams in each bracket that we don't know and can't even guess. You know, it could be that all Eastern Coast teams seem to like sweep the first couple of rounds, and then it's Eastern Coast heavy and they don't really have anyone who they're keen to send to the Western Coast, so we start to run into that, like then they'll just do random. I was intrigued to see where how they go with that, and I'm still not fully convinced that. Like, they didn't really talk about how they're going to pick opponents for this round. Like, they talked about the brackets, and then they threw in a sentence that said, within the brackets, there's no restriction on matchups, which I took as somewhere in the article it says that there's, like, certain teams can't play each other.
Yeah, that comes from... I mean, you don't have to worry about this year because if the two team is in, then the first team is also not in, because that's the issue. And then sometimes there's issues about amateur teams that are connected to a professional team, and that issue doesn't come in. And I think mostly that statement applied to the thing Vessi brought up about traditionally teams that enter in the same round cannot face each other in that first round that they enter. And I believe that statement was clarifying that restriction does not apply this year. That's how I read it.
Let me see.
Boy, it's a bit of a mess of a tournament this year, right?
You're telling me. And part of it, with this mini bracket thing, with one MLS team per mini bracket, none of the Major League Soccer teams, and to that extent, none of the USL Championship seeded teams, could face one another until, at earliest, the quarterfinals. So it prevents Major League Soccer teams from taking each other out until basically the last possible moment. I mean, likewise, the USL Championship teams. And I keep bringing this as just a way that even with only 8 teams in the bracket, that they have concocted a way to really, really make sure that as many Major League Soccer teams stay in for as long as possible.
Yeah, because I don't think you mentioned it, but we're in this group of four, this mini group, for the round of 32. In the round of 16, you will play the winners in that group. Like, they don't regroup them.
Correct.
Mm-hmm.
So if the MLS team gets knocked out, then the next game is going to be probably two USL Championship teams. And then when you get to the quarterfinals, I believe they are also grouping them by East and West. If I recall correctly from the article.
That's the hope. Yes. They're hoping to keep it east-west.
Yeah, so that's new for this year, too. I don't recall. I think last year they just went into a bracket at that point. So, yeah. With all of these MLS teams pretty much being West Coast teams, let's, for argument's sake, say Atlanta United gets knocked out in round of 32 or something like that. There's an interesting situation then that the entire East Coast side is just USL teams all to the final.
So the sentence that made me have a huge question mark was, any teams, and this is in every round, any teams who are precluded from playing each other until the final will be placed in different bracket groups. So who's, I don't know if I missed it, but like, who's precluded from playing whom?
I think that's just carryover language from previous years, because like Yo said, if the two teams in the tournament, then the first team isn't. So that there's really, unless there's some deep...
Unless there's an amateur team that somehow... Because we've had... there's been years in the past where, let's say, the Red Bulls U23 team made it in.
Mm.
They would be precluded from playing the Red Bulls proper until... The only way they could play each other is if they both made it to the finals.
Yeah.
But I don't know if there's any amateur teams that fall into that category this year. I don't think there is.
And there's no two teams that fall into that category.
Because if the two team is in, that means the first team is not.
Okay.
Just by the nature of how this is set up this year.
Okay.
I'm just seeing the list now, and I don't see anything that jumps out at me.
Because in the first round, the first sentence of the first round says, teams were paired geographically with the restriction that teams from the same division, Division 3, cannot be paired to play each other. That's the only restriction on who can play each other that I saw. And so when that sentence started popping up in every other round, yes, I was like, is that just thrown in there in case multiple Division 3 teams make it further and further in each round?
Yeah, because so in the first round this year, it's all amateur versus professional teams.
Because
there's an equal number of third division teams and amateur teams in the tournament. And so they've paired them amateur versus professional.
I just was like, for some reason in my head, I thought I had read it somewhere that we were not going to be playing the MLS team because we enter in the same round.
And that's typically how it works.
But I can't find that to like substantiate where I thought that may have come from. So I think
that was just what people who are familiar with it assumed. Since that was how it has worked in previous years, but now the actual handbook's out, they've stricken that, it seems.
So then we'll get to watch them pick, I don't know, what was it last year? Balls?
Cards. They went the balls towards the end.
See, that's the kind of investment that MLS really wants, is to go from envelopes to, from cards to envelopes to balls.
So
Vesti, Hounds enter in the round of 32 along with an MLS team. Your preference, drawn against the MLS team or drawn against a other USL team or potentially lower leagues team?
Since we had our fun last year with the three MLS sides, I guess if you want us count that loss as fun.
It's fun, yes.
I would like to see us go deep. So whatever is the best path for that.
The path least especially resistance?
Especially since we're coming in so late. There's never been a better year to see the Hounds in the final of this tournament. So whatever gets us there.
If you had to pick a third division team that you really want to face...
I think seeing our old friends in Richmond would be fun.
Ooh, that's a good shout. That's a real good shout.
I don't know if that's a path of least resistance, but I think that'd be a fun one.
They were kind of blah last year in League One. I think they're predicted to be kind of blah in League One again this year. I like Richmond. That's a good... I wasn't thinking that, but I like that shout. Ariana, lower league team or MLS team in the round of 32?
I want to see us play Steel City FC.
Ooh, they'd be making help. Because at that point, we're really the bad guys. If an amateur team makes it to the round 32, we are the bad people in that scenario.
Yeah. I want to see them make, I would want to see us win, because I too, in my Hot Toes episode, said we're going to win the damn thing. So we have to win the damn thing one way. But I think that it would be really cool for us to have like a battle of the Berg. Riverhounds SC versus Steel City FC.
You know what would make it more fun?
Mm.
Make that an away game.
At Steel City FC.
Yes.
Where would they play?
At Pitt. I'm assuming at Pitt.
They're playing at Pitt, but they also have their own field elsewhere. Out by Narcissi Winery, I believe. They have their own field.
Oh, shit.
I thought.
I'd pretty good.
I don't know
I'd
why they're playing at Pitt. But, yeah. I'm pretty sure their official home field was out there. At least it was last year.
Maybe
I was surprised when they say it was going to be a pit. Maybe.
Because you have to have so much seating and ingress and egress and all those kind of things. So maybe it doesn't fit those qualifications.
I feel like Pitt doesn't really seating wise, but yeah.
Does it still have lights?
Or I don't know.
Yeah,
that's a good question. I have not been to there, but I've talked enough to the Mertz family who has a player on Steel City FC. And they have talked a lot about how Narcissi Wine is always a good place to start. And then you go to
I believe longtime friend of the Steel Army, Eben McIntyre, or the McIntyre family. I think Eben is playing for Steel City.
Oh.
Yeah. That's kind of fun.
Yeah, that'd be fun. Or the Maryland Bobcats.
Don't they? And I think one or two former Hounds. Nicky Kalerick, is he captain on that team? We're not setting this well if I'm asking these questions, but we'll get to that later.
Well, you know what? If you want to find out,
yes,
go check them out next week.
You should. I'm going to the game.
I am.
I'm going to try to make it.
Nice. Yeah, we're jumping ahead here, but this upcoming Thursday at Pitt, Steel City hosting the infamous Michigan Stars, first round of the Open Cup. Tickets are just $7. You should definitely get down there. There's nothing quite like first round Open Cup madness, insanity, absurdity. I'm not sure which is the correct word, but I miss the Hounds playing early round Open Cup games, and I'm glad that I'm going to go and see one this year outside of the Hounds. And you should do it too, damn it.
Mm-hmm. Be there, be square.
Damn right. Oh, jeez. Yeah. What's next on our little...
Oh, you loop back around to the stadium.
Damn it. We're on the third... We're an hour in this, we're on the third talking point.
I love when we say we're going to have tight shows and then we don't.
And we talk 15 minutes about favorite type of pies.
That's the most important, though.
People love the chatter before we get into the real stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Sports talk radio is best when they're not talking about sports. Anyways, the Hounds, after quietly discussing potential expansion plans, just blew that out of the water today by going very public about their intentions of expanding Highmark Stadium. Vesti, you have the potential timeline and details in front of you. Share with the class.
I do. So if you missed the article today on GetEQA, I think it's who broke it. The Hounds are planning to expand Highmark Stadium in three phases, and they are currently seeking some grant money for the first phase, plus the money that they're funding themselves. So as part of that grant, they had to file paperwork to kind of like talk about the whole thing in general. And some folks online was able to pull that down, and not much more information outside of what's in the news article, but there is a little more about like the timeline and like kind of estimated cost for the whole thing. No renderings or anything at this point. They're really just looking for money. They don't need that. that kind of level of detail right now. So anyways, so phase one is what they are, seems like they're ready to do all of a sudden. So phase one would be, they are saying a seat expansion and event center upgrade, which includes a rooftop deck and additional suite seating, locker room upgrades, and event areas. The translation of that is they're going to redo the team building, basically. And they're saying that phase one would be November of this year to May of next year, so the off season. Phase two, they are saying is going to be a premium hospitality upgrade and not one, but two Rotundras, which they're saying seating for that, but I they've mentioned standing before, so I guess we'll see what's there. But presumably that's, you know, the corners of the grandstand, also some corporate space expansion. I think it's like part B of the building redesign. And so they're estimating phase two to start October 2025 to May 2026, so next off season. And then phase three will be the big one, probably what's more important to us since we're not necessarily in the suite area much, the big stadium seat expansion. So seat expansion and new press box, so redoing the entire main grandstands and presumably our section two of it. So they are expecting to add 8,300 seats in that expansion. That one is going to be a bit longer than the others. They are estimating October 2026 to start to April 2028. So that's going to be two off seasons worth of construction. I would guess maybe the grandstand one and then our side and the another. I guess that remains to be seen. Each of these phases are, you know, dependent on getting the money and the need to do them. So they would like to do all three, but isn't necessarily guaranteed. And they are expecting this whole process and project to cost a cool $75 million, which, if you recall, when they built Highmark for 10, that's a lot more money. So
don't it for 10 and cause it to go into bankruptcy.
Yeah, hopefully it's not 7x bankruptcy this time. But they obviously have more money and more assets this time around. Also, there's kind of an interesting footnote in all this as well, that the $75 million also includes, they mentioned acquisitions. So they didn't really mention in detail what that is. I'm going to assume buying the parking lots on the east side, but we'll see.
I mean, it seems to be the obvious, because they're not buying the train tracks, obviously. They got the parking lot on the west.
Yeah.
They own part of the road behind the grandstand. So they got to be going towards the east.
Yeah, unless there's more road to buy. And speaking of that road, the consensus seems to be that for that phase three expansion of redoing the main grandstands, is that A, that would probably be a two-tier thing, and B, that they are going to lobby the city to get rid of Station Square Drive, because it's honestly it's kind of redundant with the main highway right next to it too. So if they can get the city to let them tear up that road, that basically doubles like the square footage on that side of the stadium. So there'd be a ton more space for concourse and expanding upward.
So that's the layout. That's the vision, the multi-year, multi-phase vision. Again, I'm shocked. We were in a meeting, myself, Ariana, and a couple others, a couple 6 to 8 weeks ago, and this was being discussed as kind of an idea, a theory, a skeleton idea, nothing even worth publicly discussing. And now we got Tuffy on local radio making the pitch, and the full court press is on. Ariana, what do you make of, one, these plans, and then two, what seems to be a fairly aggressive timeline and public push?
I'm here for the plans. They were vague enough that they didn't mention what we've been asking for. all these years.
Yeah, I didn't see, I didn't hear what phase the pissers under the section were in.
I hear no roof.
I hear no roof. I also hear no safe standing. So those are the three kind of, I guess, big points for us. So I didn't hear that, but like they're just vague enough that it could be in any of the phases. Presumably the first, well, I don't even know, because first one's not necessarily on our side of the field. But yes, I think that this, I was very surprised that the news dropped. When I first got the notification from KDK, to be 100% honest, I thought it was like a leaked type of situation where they were going to be like, oh, it's been leaked that the Riverhounds are planning this. But it seems as though, you know, the Riverhounds were like fully on board with this and are going to try to use it to their advantage. They're now getting the name out there even more. Getting the, like, the conversation didn't just end with like the Riverhounds want to build a new stadium. No, it ended with like this, more like more space means more concerts, more like high school and college competitions, more, or like playoff rounds, more growth in Station Square, which from what I'm understanding is seeing a decreasing growth in recent years. So, you know, they're making their public cry for like why it's important, which I think is a huge portion of, you know, the grant, trying to get the grant funding. It's basically a PR, you know, plug, but to get whomever needs to be on their side, whether it's the public who can then call and, you know, talk about to their representative, like, oh, this is great or whatever, but, or even if it's just, you know, someone who's in charge of that can give their own take on like, oh, I see the growth is not meant to be just a bubble for the Riverhounds. It is meant to grow the South or the Station Square, it meant to grow, you know, the concert venues in Pittsburgh. They mentioned in the article that it would be a great place for people, for places who can't, like bands who can't necessarily afford to sell out, like Heinz Field, or like PPG Paints.
So
it's another option. I can't say that name. I hate trying to say it. So it's just Heinz Field.
Okay.
They can't sell out Heinz Field. They can't sell out PPG Paints. They can't sell out PNC Park. So another option,
but, okay, now that we'll have. Let me jump in here, right? Because this is the part that I'm not. They're selling it, and I'm not buying it. I feel like Stage AE is core of the market on that size venue, especially outdoor venue.
How many does Stage AE fit? I'm gonna Google it. So keep going.
I think it's like 3 inside and like 5 or 8 outside.
So then that would be a little bit more than Stage AE. Maybe that's why we're not getting concerts now, because we're competing with the 5,000.
But I mean, once you get to 15,000, now you're at PPG levels.
Yeah, but they're not charging PPG prices. Go ahead.
Stage AE has a standing capacity, so I presume that's like outside. 5,500 people and a seating capacity of 1,100.
I don't know.
We're competing now with them.
I wouldn't say we're competing with them.
Because I don't think we have the facilities to compete. Like,
yeah, you
know, the team building is too small. That's part of the reason why they're doing that first, is because that can be the gateway for this other stuff. I do wonder if. For the concert venue side of it, I wonder if some of this push or some of this accelerated timeline is because the site over at the former Civic Arena is actually getting moving now, and I know they talked about building a concert venue there. I don't know if that's still in the works, so I'm wondering if they're trying to get in ahead of time so that they can, a similar size venue probably, so that they can get there before that.
So, I mean, that's, to me, that's the one part in this that I'm not convinced on the theater / concert venue space.
I'm not sure they're probably just like throwing every possibility out there so to make it look enticing.
Yeah, makes sense.
Yeah.
Or Tuffy really is pining for the days of the Isolated Amphitheater.
Yes. I don't know. I'm still squarely in the I'll believe this when I see it type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Especially all three phases. I could see them, they need to blow the locker rooms out and expand all the footprint of that building because what they have now is woefully inadequate. I will believe a second story of the grandstands and or Paul Child stand when I see it with my own eyes.
I think this, as Ariana mentioned, this is definitely a PR push at this moment. Because the grant that they have applied for is a state level grant, it's not local, and so like they really need to drum up the local support so that people in Harrisburg notice it. Because they can't. If it was a local grant, they could probably talk to people behind the scenes and kind of keep it more hush hush. And if it was locally, I also think they'd have a better chance of getting it because, boy, does Station Square need something that. Mm-hmm. Area is on life support at the moment since they lost UPMC. So I feel like city leaders would definitely be up for it, but they don't have to woo city leaders. They have to woo the people in Harrisburg who don't have that connection. So I think at this point they really got to hit this PR campaign. I guess write to your state senator if you want this to happen. If you're not conflicted about the public money stuff. Yeah, there's definitely things you can do as a supporter to help grease these wheels if you make your voice heard.
From what I've read, and maybe I missed this, I mean, this isn't tax incentive type stuff. This is straight, here's a check.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but it still kind of falls into that public money for private, stadium sort of... talking thing.
It's just weird that it's part of a pre-existing grant application as opposed to what we normally see with stadiums is kind of a separate standalone bill or action item that gets this type of money as opposed to applying through a previously established grant.
Yeah, and it's not like they're getting money in perpetuity or anything out of it. It's a one-time deal. But and it's also not like Tuffy's a billionaire trying to get money that he doesn't need. Yeah, this is they don't have deep pockets. But I know some people still aren't necessarily keen on the idea of getting public money for this sort of thing. And I know it tickles that in my mind a little bit too. But I have conflicted loyalties in this situation.
It's easier to shield on everyone else when they take the public money, then all of a sudden you're like, ooh, they might do it themselves.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, they definitely need to, like I said, get the PR campaign going because you can actually go on the state budget website and get a spreadsheet of all the places that applied for this grant. I don't know how much the bucket is, but there are a ton of people looking for money. So, it's a big field and they got to make themselves stand out as, I guess, a worthwhile awardee. So that's definitely what this is for at the moment.
How does Steel Army get their own $10 million check? And how do we woo the people with them?
We steal 15,000 bobbleheads and sell them all on the black market.
Let's do it. Until Yager comes looking for us.
You know the Riverhounds admin has something on the whiteboard about when it's... was it Forbes bobblehead night this year? That there's going to be some sort of callback to the pen.
Some hijinks.
Yeah.
Will be afoot.
Oh, yeah. Maybe the superstars will steal it.
Ooh, and try to eat it.
Yeah.
Because they like eating those types of things, right?
Yeah, you mentioned that you don't know how big the pool is, but something they said later on in the interview for KDK, not mine, somebody else's interview, it said across the state requests have totaled more than $4 billion. And in this local district alone, it's been more than 250 million. So 10 million is pocket change. We're not asking for that much.
So is it,
well, that's the number of requests. I don't know what that.
How many 10 million dollar checks they have to hand out?
Yeah.
I feel like in comparison, you know, in this area, it's, you know, 250 million. There can't be that many requests. So I feel like some people have bigger requests and they shouldn't get it over us because we have a smaller request. And it's not like we're asking for a majority of the money. Like, they did mention 15 million is going to be private. So I like to think that we have a better chance than normal, but call your state representatives. Email them.
We've got years to figure this out. And by we, I mean definitely.
I got to list now. There are 132 requests for Allegheny County.
Okay. And
we got to make it 133.
Wow. Yeah.
Who in here do we need to? I don't know.
We can build the Steel Army clubhouse.
That would be cool. On top of our section.
She just guessed.
Under our section with the pissers.
Can we push, as part of this grant money, that the River Hounds have to build an ammo doghouse again? This is a deep cut for people who are around the Bethel Park days in like 99, 2000, 2001. But they used to have a Snoopy looking doghouse at the end of the field that Ammo was supposedly living in.
Supposedly, he says.
He was.
Yeah, they could cut out 5,000 of that 10 million for a sweet ass doghouse. For sure.
And put it where the bouncy castle is, because we don't need a bouncy castle.
Is the bouncy castle going away?
Bouncy house? Probably not.
We'll find out on Saturday.
The kids love that. Yeah, we will.
Well, they could be like the Buckos. They put in that like playground thing in the outfield a couple years ago. We can get it like a dedicated ammo. I don't know.
Make it an ammo house that kids can play in, and you've got them sold. Yep.
Ammo's
a big ass
house.
Ammo house. It's adult that, ammo, that kids yep. can take picture in and play. Yeah, that's it.
Done.
Write that down, front office.
We need to amend the grant so that we just made it better.
You know what's going to take it over the edge? They're like tearing on getting the money now, but if you have the doghouse.
For the children.
For the Army is for the children.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. I'm literally wearing that shirt right now.
Home opener is this Saturday. Hounds versus Orange County. The boys of OC had a draw this past week in their first game.
Mm.
Came as a bit of a shock in terms of they were down a goal in the dying minutes. Had a late corner. They bring their keeper up as the 11th attacker. And the motherfucker heads the ball in. Goalie goal in week one of the USL. Orange County with a draw. Outside of that, Orange County, one of the few West Coast teams that don't really have a Hounds connection outside of Jeff Garner is now here from there.
Mm-hmm.
But speaking on the game itself, Vesti, what are you going to be looking forward to? In terms of a bounce back from last week in New Mexico?
Well, since I thought they played like all right, I want to see something on the offense. I want to see some creativity, goals, obviously, at home. That's kind of it. Maybe not have Danny be center back, but I guess we'll see.
he pushed up a little bit as the game went on.
Your center back shouldn't be in the other 18. That's what the wingers are for. It was such a weird thing.
I don't know. It was.
I don't like it. And if I don't like it, it has to change.
I mean, assuming Hogan is able to play and Kayette is has match fitness to start, I feel like the Danny Centerback experiment is just it's a stopgap thing. I mean, maybe we'll find out. Maybe we'll find out about the status of Keziah Sterling, which is, I think, the question looming over all of this, is when do we see him and how many minutes can he go? I mean, that's where sadly, that's all my thoughts of this match right now are boiling down to kind of the guys that, in my mind, are starters who, for one reason or the other, did not start last week in what is their timeline to becoming a starter with regular minutes. And I don't have good answers for any of that stuff. Ariana, any thoughts of where this team looks coming out of week one?
I think you hit it on the nose. I think that I'd like to see Kayette in earlier. I'd like to see Hogan in general starting. I'd like to see Blackstock starting, Biasi starting. All of those names were on the bench. I'd like to see Keziah, who, you know, I'm hoping that, you know, that his absence last week might have been the last hurdle we needed to clear. There's like a handful of people that I'm like, come on. I want to see how those mesh, those players. I want to see how we can start to like rebuild. I didn't like the lineup from the last game, so I want the lineup entirely changed from top to bottom.
Not top to bottom.
Not entirely. There's definitely a good chunk of names in there that I'm okay seeing on the field, but I just think that we're missing the forward presence is what I'm you know, seeing. We had good defense. You know, we had a good keeper. We had a good back line, which is something I said all season last year. But we need a forward. We need someone to either step up. We need to see Keziah play. I need to see Keziah play. I feel like we only got a short chunk of playing time in preseason. I want to say it was like 30 minutes, maybe less. So I want to see what he can do at home, you know, when people start to mesh again. I want to see that. I just feel like they didn't communicate well, so just start over again. And don't put Griffin at center back. Nobody wants that. I don't even think Danny probably wants that. And I wonder, because the only...
Don't go asking him.
Truly... No. The only truly new name that was unexpected for me was Jackson Walthy being in the midfield. I'm not mad about it. As I've talked about before, I'm a big fan of his. Well, but like... Him being there, because then we had Mertz, Forbes Jr., and Rovi kind of as midfielders or defensive midfielders, and then Danny. Like, so that's six midfielders / defensive midfielders, and I'm like, that doesn't sit right with me. So I just was like, I love Danny, but I don't want to see him again as center back. Please, Bob, don't put him in again as center back.
If you're listening, Bob.
I know you're listening, Bob, because this is all that matters to you. I was just surprised because he is a rookie. And he's not... is not known for his... love of rookies, so yeah.
Fair enough.
I was surprised, but yeah.
Fair enough. Okay. We will move on from that game. Let's talk about the fun stuff coming up in the next couple days, shall we?
Woo! Woo!
Let's start. We're recording this on Thursday. If you are ambitious in listening to this on Friday, that means you still have time to get to All Hounds Eve.
You should be listening to it on the way.
On the way to the eve of All Hounds Eve. The Pitch on Butler, starting at 6 p.m. Who knows how long it goes? That all depends on how enthusiastic all of you are. The event that we've tried to do for the last couple years, but this year it's actually going to happen. We're very excited. The venue is kind of a great little venue for this. Brian is excited to host us. Ariana, you've been working on lining up some special guests.
Yes, I have a handful confirmed special guests. Guests, plural.
Now, with these guests, will they be giving some remarks tomorrow night, or?
I'm sure I could strong arm some of them into giving remarks. Others, probably not. But you know, come hang out with our special guests, and just have a night at an awesome bar. I did want to tell everyone how to look for it. I feel like I missed it the first time. It's a bar with a big mural on the front that says not the bar's name.
It says the former bar's name. It says no names, which is not the current name, but that was the old name.
Yes, but it's easy to spot. It's a very pretty mural, so keep your eye out for that. Parking in the immediate area is free. But the closer you go into Lawrenceville, gets less free. The further down Butler Street, I think it's like a block or two is still free. So, look around in the area. There's like a busy Beaver in the back that has parking around it as well. If you're okay to walk, you know, half a block, be there, be square.
So that is Friday.
I'm excited.
You should be. I'm excited. I first thought I was going to be late going there tomorrow, but my plans have changed. I will be there. I will be there at 6. I'll be there before 6, helping to whatever stuff we have to do, or just having a beverage before we start. Who knows? But I'm in there for the duration of it on Friday. Saturday, the high holy day of the Steel Army calendar, opening day. Tailgate, 12:00. Tell your friends. Tell your friends, tell your family members. Your ass wants to be in the west parking lot of Highmark Stadium starting at noon. St. Patrick's Day be damned.
Yeah. I mean, you could go to the parade if you wanted to and then just walk across the bridge and you're there.
Or just cut out the middleman and just go straight there. Because you're drinking from when you get there till 9 p.m.-ish anyways, so...
Yeah.
It just seems smart to do that.
Yeah. Yeah. Be there. Be square.
So, yeah. That starts at noon. Probably picks up in earnest 2 to 3 o'clock. Mm-hmm. We'll have our first thunderstrucking of the year. That'll be great.
Thunderstrucking.
We'll have to get in line early for the 1,000 championship, mini championship banners that they are giving away.
I'm kind of excited for that. I think it's adorable.
I'm surprised we got 90 minutes in this podcast and now we're just now mentioning these.
I know. Well, they threw that in last minute, so we haven't mentioned it in the
podcast. That was not on the original promotions calendar.
Yeah, they've changed the original promotions calendar since we've talked about it.
Of course,
just a smidge, but they've changed it a smidge. Some of the appearances have just shifted around, probably for scheduling reasons, but yeah. I'm excited for that cute little banner.
Yeah.
It'll go great next to my ammo bobblehead. So
someone told me that the cute little banner is a mini replica of a bigger banner that might be at the stadium.
Ooh.
Maybe.
Get to see a fancy new thing?
Fancy fabric. So that takes us to the tailgate. Kickoff at 7. It sounds like TIFO is all but done, ready to go. So we have opening day TIFO.
Just needs slashed.
word perfect, because we have to worry about the wind.
Yeah.
That gets us to kickoff. That gets us presumably one closer appearance on the Kenny Forbes appearance tracker.
Yeah.
Get him closer to setting the club record for appearances.
Should I bring that tomorrow? I mean, it'll be in my car, so I guess that's...
You do what you want to do.
Neither here nor there. It's in my car until Saturday, until we can put it up, so
it'll
be there.
I
can bring it in on Friday.
I'll
make Kenny sign it.
Well, if you're going to do that, then sure. On Saturday.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
Friday, if he decides he's not square, so... yeah, that'd be cool.
Was that a confirmation of a guest?
Anyway. No.
Seemed like, okay, fair enough. So after the win on Saturday, victory selfie, it'll be great.
Mm-hmm.
That gets us to the next event being the following, this time next week, the Steel City FC Open Cup match against the Michigan Stars at Pitt. I'll be there, you'll be there, everyone you know who's cool will be there. Looking forward to it. And I think that pretty much covers our... That covers our like, upcoming calendar for the next 2 weeks, I believe.
Yeah. I mean, I'm traveling to Louisville next weekend.
That's next week's show.
But that's next week. Although
we'll have to figure out when to record if we're at the...
That's what I was just going to say. We'll have to figure out when to record.
That's next week's problem.
Wednesday.
Next week's problem.
Yeah.
Beautiful. Yeah. Ariana, anything else you want to cover before we get the hell out of here?
No. Become a member. We're on a hot streak. If you're not already a member and you're listening to Houndsy, just pull the rug.
All right.
Yeah, be a member. We have hats. Those are still on presale. Should still be on presale if you're listening to this on Friday.
But they are in.
They are in. They look sick. I'm so excited for them. If you're not listening on Friday and listening at a later time, they're $30. Buy them and look sick. So yeah.
Buy a membership.
I think that's it.
Because
buy a membership.
We're getting close to having to figure out if we're going to order more of them and when we do order more, how many more we order. Cause people have been, they've been scooping up the first ones we bought, shall we say?
Mm.
Yeah. I would ask Vesty what he wants to say, but apparently work has called him away. I mean, he's still on the Zoom call. Let me see if he unmutes as I say, Vesty, you want to say some last words? And he says nothing because he's got work stuff going on. So yeah, let's get the hell out of here. We'd like to thank the Beautiful Game Network for providing the online hosting of Houndsy. Check out the wealth of soccer content being produced weekly at bgn.fm. The Houndsy theme music was composed and performed by Rocket Man and the Space Babies. Check them out at facebook.com/spacebabiesPGH. The show is produced by Joe Madurek. Email the show at pghstillarmy@gmail.com and put podcast in the subject line. All complaints about the show can be sent to nick.noble@mail.wvu.edu. On behalf of Vesty and Ariana, I'm Dan Yost. Thank you for listening, and we'll be back again soon.